Hello and welcome to the Rhythm Changes podcast. I'm your host, Will Chernoff. No sponsor on this episode. I think this one is kind of special. There has never really been one like it before. And so I just want to give a special thank you to Karen Plato for making this episode possible. I couldn't have done it without you. I know I got a second chance to do it too as well. And you don't always get second chances to do things. So I'm so grateful for your support in making it possible. Let's get into it. All right. Well, there's actually one more thing I wanted to let you know about this episode, and that's the audio quality. You will notice that it's not what you're used to hearing from any other episode. That's another distinctive thing about this one, the guest, the circumstances, the environment. So I appreciate your patience with that. I think it's more than worth rolling with that, but I just want to give you a heads up about that. So without further ado, please enjoy this very special episode. Our guest today is a storied person in our community, beloved for many decades as a singer, teacher, person who has inspired so many people, and I'm honored to introduce on the Rhythm Changes podcast, Kate Hammett-Vaughn.
Thank you for coming to my little house below everything and hanging out, because it's a space that feels really good to me to be here. So
it's a very lovely space. I appreciate that this gets to happen here. When I walked in here, we were listening to Jerry Mulligan playing the music of Monk.
Yep.
And that made me think about how I was listening through your music, and I was listening to some of the Monk tunes that you've done. And there's two of them that are some of my favorite tracks of yours. One of them is Monk's Dream.
That's a wonderful song.
Yeah. And then the other one is I Mean You. That's one of like the liveliest. You have a lot of lively songs across all the albums that you've done, but that's another one of my favorites. But let's just start there for fun.
Okay.
What do you have to tell about the music of Thelonious Monk from what you've done over the years?
I started listening to that music when I was just kind of at the end of my university time, and so I think my brain was kind of wishy-washy at that time. You know, I was thinking, that's cool. And I was looking at album covers and stuff and going, wow, that must be a really cool record because it's got a great, a great cover on it. But Monk's music just pulled me in because it is so, what is the word I want there? It's so enticing in a way that a lot of people would not find it enticing, because it's clunkety and big, open spaces, and the way he plays, you know, chunk, 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 chunk. And so I think that a lot of people kind of go, that's weird. Right? But for some reason, it just became pretty quickly something that I was really attracted to.
Yeah. So Monk, I didn't have on my radar until I walked in and I heard you playing that on your record player.
Yeah.
But the first person I was going to bring up was, I mean, I discovered Joni Mitchell when I was a teenager, but I'm, you know, that's discovering her decades on. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm kind of jealous of anyone who got to discover Joni Mitchell in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so it's been a long time having been inspired by Joni Mitchell back mm-hmm. then. So is there anything you want to say about her in the same vein, just overall, and about her music?
Joni is, there's a word for it, but I don't know what it is. It has something to do with magic.
Yeah.
It has something to do with, I just feel like she has taken our bones out of our body, you know, and mixed them all up. So there's a whole bunch of us that just go like, oh, Joni in this record and Joni in that record. And we all feel like it's part of, she's part of us, we're part of her in a way. And so I still have all my Joni Mitchell records. And yeah, since I was, I don't know, 14.
Wow. Okay.
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about it because I think Joni is somebody who you, when you look at the whole life and the career holistically, mm-hmm. I mean, you could like zoom in and think about this was this phase where mm-hmm. she sounded like this, and then this was like Blue, and then this was Mingus, and these were the different kind of buckets that she had along the way. But when you zoom out and you look at the entire thing, it's all just Joni.
It's just Joni.
And I think that's something that's important to you as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because you've done that with all the different things that you've done.
Yeah, it's important to me to feel like all of those, all the music I still want to play and all the music that I've learned to play and sing over the years, it has to all be something that feels like a river. You know, going along
stream.
That's right. The Joni thing. Never get away from Joni. Can't be done.
Yeah. And it's been so fun for me to discover it too. And I mean, Chris Wong had you featured in a chapter of his book, so that was a great recent reference point for me as well. You taught a bunch of my friends at Capilano University, so there's the whole teaching side of it as well. But I first went to...
I hope I taught them something.
I know that you did to many, many people. I went first to your quintet with obviously you on vocals, then saxophone, and then two people who you've played with a whole lot, Chris Gestrin on piano, Andre Lachance on bass and drums. So you've got Jim Pynchon on saxophone, and then those two, Chris and Andre, and then Tom Foster on the drums. So you've made multiple albums with this quintet.
Yeah, I don't know if multiple's the right name. I think it might have been only three at the max, I think.
That's multiple.
But that's multiple, I guess. It's more than one, less than 10. I feel like we just sort of became a band, and nobody said we should do this or do that. We'd have a little session, and then somebody would say, you know, oh, but what about so-and-so? What about Tom on drums? And I said, oh, Tom, that'd be fantastic, right? And then somebody else would say, yeah, and have you thought about, you know, Andre Lachance? And I'd say, oh, yeah, well, I love Andre's playing, but, you know, probably won't get him. And the next thing you know, we've got this big band that was really fun for a long, long time. And then it just was, you know, people change, things roll around, go this way, go that way. And so I had that band for quite a while, and then it just sort of chipped away little bits. And but for the time that we were together, I just thought it was magic. I loved that band so much.
Yeah, there's another track that really struck me when I was listening to that was, is it called I'm Gonna Go Fishing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another one of my favorite tracks from you. And it just takes that album. Oh, I can't remember which album of the group it's on, but
I can't remember which
one. That's okay. It just takes it to a whole new dimension. Like there's standards, and the group sounds awesome, and you're swinging, and you're so in sync with them, and you're all communicative with each other. And then you drop that track, and it's like, boom, it goes to a whole new place. It's
amazing. And it has that whole thing in the middle of it.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was thinking.
I love it, though.
Well, I just kept it. I just said that's what it's going to be, right? And it was such an interesting band because we were all really interested in the music, but we were all such different people. I was so happy to have that band for such a long time.
Yeah. And then I guess the next band that I checked out was Garbo's Hat, your improvising trio. And I mean, I don't really know why that name. Like, I don't really know the story behind that name. Can you tell me why it ended up having that name? You and Paul Blaney and Graham Ward.
Yeah, those guys. That was so good. Just so free, you know. Paul, have you listened to Paul play the bass?
Only through this music. Yeah, yeah. Not really more. Not just really that beyond that.
The sound he makes, so great. where was I at?
Why the name?
Why
did it get called Garbo's Hat?
It got called Garbo's Hat because I couldn't come up with a name for it. And one day I had this little felt hat, and I just put it on one day, and somebody said to me, hey, that looks like a hat that Garbo would wear.
Okay.
And I said, really? And then I looked in the mirror and I went, yeah, okay. Well, certainly this is Garbo's hat. And then I just wore that hat for a long time, and people would say to me, hey, where'd you get that hat? And I said, well, it's not mine. It's Garbo's hat, right? And then finally we decided that was going to be the name.
Okay, because I could picture it then, because I tried to find out like what Garbo's hat was, me not knowing at all, right? Yeah. And I ended up finding stills from the films where it's this like super tall, skinny,
oh yeah, that's another thing.
Hat. So I don't know if it looked like that or if it was something else. So it's not like a direct hat reference, but it's a more general thing. Oh, that's funny. Yeah,
yeah, it looks like Garbo's hat.
Yeah.
But she wears in all these movies.
And like, if you made the Garbo's Hat albums before the quintet and some of the other stuff that we were talking about, you brought the group back once or twice.
Yeah.
In more recent years, I was able to find that you brought it back to a place that a lot of my friends played at in the last decade or so, which isn't active right now, I don't think, but it was called the Sawdust Collector. I think you played there, but also a presentation house. So yes. I think you did one or two of those kind of places. Yeah, you brought it back. Yeah, with the two guys with the same lineup. Yeah,
it makes me think just for a minute, probably off track a little bit, but
go for it.
Through the years that I've been singing and making music, I find that there's usually a line of people who will just say, you know, oh, I liked that record, but they don't want to hear the other ones, right? And I think the Garbo's Hat was, you know, something that got about, you know, 8 people said, oh. That's cool music. Well, wait, I might be lying. It might be 10. But a lot of people were sort of like, what's that about, you know?
Yeah.
But I loved that band.
That's the thing about the holistic life as a singer and as an artist, right? Is that for you, it's all part of one journey, but for somebody else who's just coming in, they'll jump onto one or two things, and then they won't have the total view necessarily, except for like the true people, like the true friends who are with you the whole way. But everybody else is kind of dipping in and out. And I bet like if you go on and you play at jazz festivals and you sing standards and stuff, they're surprised to like learn that you did Garbo's Hat.
Oh yeah, people over the years, you know, they've said, so and so told me that you made this record called Garbo's Hat, and I said, yeah, and they said, so I'm going to go to my friend's place and hear it, and I said, okay, well, beware, because it's not going to necessarily be what you think. But it's so much fun to make that kind of free thing as well as. I don't know why people put artists in boxes, you know? Like, people have honestly said to me over the years, I really liked your such and such and such and such and such and such, but then you went crazy and I don't buy your records anymore. And I'm just like, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
Some of those records I, you know, still play myself. Sometimes I put other ones on and go, oh yeah, I should have played this one more or something, you know? It's just music, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a very generous way to respond to that, because that could be annoying for sure to hear many times. So you're really throwing them a line in terms of being nice about responding to that.
But everybody has the I don't want to say the opportunity, but the, I guess, sort of the right to express themselves and what they feel about things, you know, whether they like my hat or whether they like me going or my heart is sad and lonely, right? It's just all me, right? So I try not to get too weird about it, you know. It's just interesting that people, I don't know how to describe that, people make their choices about what they like about your art, and then they're going to say, this is good for me, that's not good for me. And you just have to go, sure, why not? I've been doing that my whole life, looking at artistic pictures and going, yeah, I love that thing. Whoa, that's weird, right? So it's just a thing, really. I try not to get upset about people if they say, you know, I didn't like that record of yours, you know.
Because that, you know, that still means that they did like the other records. So
yeah.
They're welcome anyway.
Yeah, they're welcome anyway, yeah.
Yeah. You were there at the start of what became the Vancouver Jazz Festival.
Guilty.
Can you talk about that time period? Because that's before my time. I would love to hear about that.
Guilty. I was working at that time down on, I don't know what that big main street is downtown. Runs this way and then you get down to the waterfront. But I was working there for the Coastal Jazz and Blues Society. Ken Pickering was the guy, and Robert Kerr, and they were the main guys. And they, I asked them if they'd give me a job. And they said, well, what can you do? And I said, well, I can sort of type and I can, you know, and I can write. And they said, okay, we were friends, you know. And so we did that for a while. And then somebody said to me, hey, I saw you singing somewhere. And I said, oh, yeah, I was doing a little gig at some tiny little place. And they said, and they turned around to Ken Pickering, who was my boss, and they said, did you know she sings? And he says, well, yeah, I've heard she sings, but she, and I said, do you want me to start singing in the office? And he says, well, maybe. But he was, it, they turned out being just so, to be such wonderful, helpful, gloriously sweet people, all those coastal jazz people, you know, and they gave me so much rope to hang myself with. they would put me out on any stage and just say, what are you going to do today? And I'd say, well, I don't know. I'll figure it out when I get there. Or I'd say, well, it's this band. And they'll go, oh, okay, well, it's going to be that. And some people were kind of freaked out about it because the noises were different to them. And they just, and that happens to a lot of people, not just me, for sure. You try to make a path for yourself. And, you know, you'll get something that maybe that goes like this and maybe something that goes like this or like that. And that's really been me. The up and down and all around,
yeah.
Singer.
Maybe it's hard to pinpoint now, but at that time, which would have been around 85 or 86 at the foundation of the festival, you know, you hadn't been in Vancouver for that many years in retrospect, like when you think about it now, because many decades have passed. But I know from Chris Wong's book confirming that you moved from the East Coast in 1979.
Yeah.
And so when that started happening and when those Jazz Fest people met you, how did you feel about Vancouver? Did it still feel new to you? Did you still feel settled? You were like coming up on, you know, you were in your late 20s, like you were my age.
Yeah.
You were the age I am right now.
Yeah. I think that I, that's a funny question. I feel like it's been so, this is going to sound really ditzy, but it's just been, it's been so, smooth for me in so many ways, you know, that it felt like if some part of my musical thing, you know, sort of solidified itself in a way that I just felt like, oh yeah, I can do that easily now. And then I'd listen to something else and I'd go, oh, that'd be really cool. Right? And so I ended up being, you know, I don't know how to describe it. People just would ask me, are you going to sing jazz tonight or are you doing that weird stuff?
Uh-huh.
And I'd say, well, there is no weird stuff to me. It's just all music, and that it's the same thing to me, right? Like I said, so it's just, what can you do when you live in a shoe? you know, they've got you crammed in there. It just feels, I've said this before to people, and I just feel like it was just a, it was just meant to be what was happening there. I don't feel like I ever sort of said to somebody, I have to do this or I have to do that. I would just, somebody would say to me, hey, do you want to come up to this place and sing some songs? And I'd say, yeah, sure. And then somebody else would say, hey, I heard you singing somewhere else. And do you want to come and play at a gig with us? Because we go.
Open-mindedness.
So, open-minded to the nth degree. If you don't like it, you can find something else to like. And if you come back to it, yay.
Would you say that you're a spontaneous person?
Karen, would you say I'm a spontaneous person?
Yes. Says Karen.
In the moment. I think so. I don't remember thinking that stuff about myself as I was growing up and stuff, you know, but I was just, there was always music in my parents' house. There was always lots of different kinds of music to sing and play and records to put on and stuff. My brother was a guitarist and had a whole bunch of, had bands and everything, you know, so I felt like I had so many different things hanging around me, you know, that I could just like a plum tree or something, you know, and I could just go, oh, that, right?
Yeah.
I'll try this. And, oh, that plum was good. That apple looks good too, right? And so I think that was a big thing for me to just grow up in a house where there was lots of music. My parents loved music. Everybody in my family sings. So that was just a part of it. When I went away to university, I found a few people that I really liked, kind of hippie people that I just adored. And we, you know, made a little band, and that was that. And then eventually I moved to Toronto because I thought it was too small for me. And
this is all Nova Scotia, university.
Yeah. Acadia University. I did more just, you know, fooling around at the university than I actually did anything big.
You're not alone on that.
But I had a lot of people that I met that I really liked, you know, and we made a couple of groups and stuff, and that was really fun. And but I feel like I wanted to move somewhere, and I decided I was going to go to Toronto because I knew some people there. So I went to Toronto and hitchhiked, I think, with a friend.
From Nova Scotia to Toronto.
Yeah.
Wow.
And got there and didn't really like it a whole lot. It was not my scene, you know. And so I'm just trying to think. I think that, I don't know if I went back to Nova Scotia or if I just said, no, this is not for me, and went on further from there. I think that's what happened. Like I'd done the Nova Scotia thing, right?
Yeah.
So I just kind of went, I'll stop and meet people, you know, that I know along the way, and then we'll see what happens. And my dear friend Stephen and I took this big trip and went through the Rocky Mountains and hitchhiked and did everything, and then finally ended up here. Not here specifically. We got an old beautiful old wooden house down by the Burrard Bridge, just, you know, like a block up from there. And it was just really nice. I don't know if you know what it was like in that area that time. You're too young for that. And that was a beautiful place, just a nice old house that had a couple of two guys who had a place upstairs, and then across from my dear friend Stephen and I, across from this big doors that you could slide open, right? And so that guy Paul, his name was, and he was a crazy man, but he would come over. He was very sweet to us when he found out that we had hitchhiked and that we had just found this place to put our feet down, you know.
Yeah.
And the next thing I knew, he would come over and he'd bring like a big, you know, bowl of apples or, you know, things that he thought would make us happy because he liked us and he wanted, you know, to have nice people that he liked hanging about, you know. So that was kind of fun. And and then I met some people, and then I met some more people, and then I talked to people about music, and I talked to people about more music, and, you know, found some people that had heard me somewhere and said, I really like your singing. And I'd say, thank you very much. And they'd say, I'm making a band.
Right? Just the natural connections.
Kind of, yeah. So I don't remember ever sort of trying to make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I just found people that I like to play music with.
Yeah. There was this point where you and Stephen just made the decision that you were going to do the Cross Canada trek and that you were going to end up somewhere. And yeah, it feels like, regardless of when the dates exactly were, it feels like there was a stop in Toronto along the way where you felt that out.
Yeah.
And then eventually you were like, no, it's not Toronto.
It's
and then
not Toronto.
One way or another, then you continued that journey and then you ended up here and you felt way better about it.
Yeah.
What did you really not like about Toronto? What happened?
I think Toronto and I were just not meant to be friends. I just felt like I met people there and stuff, and I had, you know, I had a few little gigs in places, and I had people that I knew in different parts of the scene there, but I never really felt like it was going to be me. And I was saying to Stephen, I don't want to go back to Nova Scotia. What should we do? And he said, well, he said, maybe we should move that direction. And I said, okay, we'll do that. And so, and eventually Stephen's sisters and his mother eventually came and landed out here too. So we had a family here for that. And so it was just, and Stephen and I are still very best friends. And so it's nice. It's all been good.
And your family stayed rooted on the East Coast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, my sister Nick moved to Nova Scotia, or to Toronto. And okay. None of us wanted to be in Toronto, except for Nick. Okay. And Nick's still there. She still likes it, you know? She's got friends. She's a singer in clubs and stuff, and she takes care of that business, and she's just doing her thing, and which is what everybody in my family does. You know, we just find the thing that we want to be, and we do it.
Yeah. You know, so if in 1979, that being the starting point of when you came here,
yeah,
this year would mark 45 years since you made that trip.
Hallelujah. Hallelujah. I made it. Yeah. And Stephen and I are still best friends.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's just, it's been really good. I can't imagine having stopped anywhere else along the way and just gone, you know, well, this is it. We didn't know where we were going, right? But we got here and we found a lovely little house down by the water. And then we just, Stephen got a job at the hotel. I had two jobs at a place in downtown, what do they call it, Gastown.
Uh-huh.
I was a waitress and in that. And then in the evening, I was a singer.
At the same place?
Same place.
Oh, okay, nice. Yeah, that's a thing that happens, yeah.
So that's what happened. There I was.
Yeah, that was one of the first things that you ended up doing once you arrived, was you found things like that. Yeah.
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 Yeah. We were just looking for ways to be happy and to find people that we liked. And it was just, yeah, it was very, what's the word I want? I don't know. It was just easy.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing ever that made us feel like, well, I've got to get out of here. You know, this is terrible.
So we felt welcome.
Yeah, we felt welcome, found good people to hang out with. It's just, it's been lovely.
Yeah. And that period in the mid-80s when you met the Coastal Jazz people and when that took off, does that stand out as a milestone of when you really kind of went to the next level of like, okay, this is really my home and I'm here right now? Or was there another milestone along the way where something changed and it went from this newness and this phase to like, okay, now I'm here and this is where I'm going to be?
I think Stephen and I both felt pretty good about where we landed. And he was working at the Hotel Vancouver, you know, and making some money there and stuff. And I was doing two things right down at the water, that joint. Found a couple of other people that we liked, and that became kind of, you know, a slightly disjointed but really fun sort of, what would I call that band? Bits and pieces. Well, we had people who were really good guitar players but didn't want to sing, and we had people who were who wanted to be drummers, or people who wanted to be this and that. We eventually just got something little together that made sense for us.
And that begins a real constant journey of being a performing artist here.
Yeah.
I still am not even totally sure, because you have so many records, like what your first record was. I know it was probably in the late 80s, early 90s that you made your first album. I wonder if it was Garbo's Hat or if it was something else around there. Like,
oh.
What you, and maybe it's even like open to interpretation, because some of those things could have started at the same time. I'm curious, like, what your first record was.
Boy.
I was thinking about that, and I don't know if I actually found the answer.
Tough question. So this is my first record that I made, that you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I feel like I know now when it was, because it was after this period. It was following the period of time that you're just describing right now. But yeah, I'm not sure like exactly which project it would have been.
Or if I had projects, or if I was just saying, you, come here, right?
Yeah.
Like, I remember my sort of little folky things, but we didn't have... We weren't recording any of that stuff. So it must have been a jazz thing in some way. But I don't know. I'll have to think about that.
Because some of your early stuff, you are playing with Andre already on bass. And you have a duo project with Andre. And then, you know, you have Kate Hammett Vaughn Trio.
Yeah.
You know, that. But like, Andre moved to Vancouver in like the early 90s.
Yeah.
So that, yeah, that's right around the same time. You might have made a couple of albums before that even, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah?
I have to think about that.
But there's like a... The period of time that you made Andre albums and I, is long.
Andre and I made a little... kind of not a cassette, but just a, what do you call it? When it's like one record in a box like that.
A single kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's looking at the discography now. Yeah, that's what I was looking at. Because I thought maybe the first Garbo's Hats Alive album would have been like one of your first albums.
Yeah.
But then I also saw there was like... You have made many projects with the Now Society and the Now Orchestra, and like that goes back to then too. That was also like one of the earliest things.
I remember somebody saying to me that they didn't want to. How did they put that? They felt like I was. They didn't think that I would be good for their band because I was too weird when I sang.
Oh.
And so people were kind of, I think, a little bit put off by that in a way, but it's just, you know, it's any person, we're all ourselves, right? We make our own selves, I think.
There's already that full spectrum is already there from that time period. If we're talking about like, okay, you have the on the free side, you're working with the Now Society.
Yeah.
Then you have Garbo's Hat, which is really kind of distinct thing that you found sound in there, and then you have Kate Hammett Von Trio comes out like not long after that too, and you're singing standards
and
it's you're already like doing it, you're all those things are already reflected like right away in when records start coming out that are your albums, it's already there.
I don't really have any kind of way to what am I looking for? How to tell you how that particular road made itself, you know? Because I feel like there were so many different people in and out of my life and of bands and stuff. You know, I'd have to go and really look at my books, but I have a lot of information over there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's been very meant to be, right? All of that stuff falling into places is like the opposite of that Paul Simon tune where he says, everything that falls together sooner or later falls apart. And I kind of feel like it's the opposite of that. I had all these little bits and pieces of things and eventually they just came together and were me.
Oh, that's great. One thing that happens a few years down the road from then, you know, now you've been here for a while, is then you started teaching more. Like, you've taught at VCC, you've taught at CAP, you've taught students for over 20 years in and of itself.
With absolutely nothing to back it up. I just walked in and people would say, you know, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I'm a jazz singer and I'd like to teach in your school. And they'd say, okay.
Which school did you have that conversation in first? Was it VCC?
VCC.
Yeah.
I had no, teaching experience from other people or for me to give to other people.
When
I started, and then people just would say, "Oh, well, you know, you should come here and you should go talk to those people," and because I'm a little crazy that way, I just said, "Sure, I'll do that."
Yeah. But you probably knew some of those people, like the other people who were on the faculties at those places. Maybe you would have seen them in the community.
Maybe, maybe.
I don't know quite what it was like at that point.
Maybe, maybe. I think for VCC, for Vancouver Community College, I think that there were a couple of people there that I knew when I first went in. There might have been one person that I knew at CAP, but it was just one of those funny things where you're there, you're looking around and suddenly there's an opening and you just go. And I remember going to VCC and they say, oh yeah, you know, we got you, we're loose, right? And you know, what do you have you know, something to show us, you know? I said, well, no, not really, but you know, I think I can do this.
Yeah. Well, when you started doing it, how did you end up finding it? Like, did you find it easy and natural to get with students? Was it something that you had to get used to over time? Like, how did it feel when you actually started doing it?
I think it felt okay for me at that time because it was still pretty loose. They didn't have a whole lot of, you have to know this and you have to know that. I kind of felt like I was just swimming around in this little pool and at both schools. And I was just figuring out who was who and what people wanted from me. And because I didn't really have any ideas, just somebody had said, you're a singer, you're a teacher, you should go and talk to them.
Well, it's not quite that you, I mean, you did have ideas. You certainly would have ideas when you get in there, but you didn't have like a prescription of like, here's no. everything that you should do to throw at somebody.
No.
Yeah, you were more open than that.
Oh, if it had been 10 years later, they wouldn't even have looked at me.
Huh.
Right, because it became a school.
Yeah.
Right.
With more of like a curriculum.
Curriculum and everything, right? But yeah, so there was me just saying, well, here I am. I said to somebody, where's the book? And they said, oh, there's no book.
And it's so true though, right? Because when you go out in the world and you sing and you perform and you do things, there isn't a book for that either. So
no.
It makes sense that you would approach it that
way. I've been, just swinging by the seat of my pants for so many years now. Yeah, it's interesting though.
Yeah, it's something that I think would be important for somebody to discover from you. And maybe when they're my age or younger, maybe they don't even appreciate it that much. But I think if you go into like an educational institution like that, mm-hmm. there's so much of it that is like dictated to you, like the curriculum.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that there's somebody like you there who approaches it from the other side, because that's more of what it ends up looking, I would think. That's more of what it ends up looking like in the world, you know?
Yeah. I think if I took what I was at that time now and popped it into VCC and CAP, both of those places would have just gone, no, honey, you got to go home and go to school, right?
Because, of course, like you didn't go to, like, what did you, when you went to university in Nova Scotia, what did you study?
Little bit of theater and some singing, but the singing was all, and I was not very into that.
Yeah, because the way that the institution is now that you were just talking about, like, and when you went to university, you know, yeah, you studied the arts and you became more interested in all aspects of the arts while you were there. But like, you didn't go to what the equivalent of what CAPU looks like today.
No,
you didn't go to do that to become the journey that you ended up going on.
Like, yeah.
You didn't start it by going to a school that laid it all out for you.
No.
No.
Ever.
Ever, yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, in my whole life.
Because there couldn't possibly be a school program that could show somebody the steps to do everything that you did, right? Because
yeah.
It's so all-encompassing.
Yeah, and I think that it was probably, you know, all in bits and pieces.
Yeah.
You know, nobody would say, well, she's got all that going on, right? It's just like, yeah, well, she's pretty good at that. I heard her do this. And, you know, so I just kept kind of, you know, one foot in front of the other and trying to keep that moving. And that was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
To me.
I'm looking.
Were you there when I was there?
Yeah, I wasn't there for very long, but some of my friends, many friends of mine who were vocalists, who did take lessons with you. Yeah.
Yes.
I'm looking at your record shelf here.
Mm-hmm.
There's the second shelf, which is all of your own kind of material that you kind of have this archive along the way. And it looks very organized to me. And there's some people's names on some of these things. And there were some musicians that I wanted to ask you about.
Oh, sure.
And one of the first names, I mean, there's Beatles. I see Beatles. That's another thing I'm looking
I love
at now,
the Beatles.
I wasn't thinking of Beatles. I was thinking of Sheila Jordan.
Oh, Sheila.
Yeah.
96 now. God
yeah,
bless
she's still
her.
With us. Yeah.
Oh my God. No, she and Jay were just amazing. She stayed down here. I always walk around and go, and Sheila was here, and Jay was here. I love those girls. Jay and I liked each other a lot, you know, and we would hang out if she was here and stuff. And then And I knew about Sheila, but I didn't know how I was going to get to talk to her or anything. And then Jay said to me one day, she says, "And do you know my friend Sheila's coming to Vancouver?" And I said, "Sheila's coming to Vancouver?" And she says, "Yeah, Sheila." And I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah." And I said, "Can I go and talk to her?" She says, "Sure, you can go and talk to her. She's Sheila Jordan, right? Wow. She's the friendliest person in the world." So adorable. Yeah, so I just, you know, walked up to her at the end of her first set and said, "I'm a friend of Jay's," and she told me that I should come over and say hello to you. And she says, "What's your name, dear?" And I said, "My name's Kate." She says, "Kate, that's a beautiful name."
Oh. Was this at like a club or a club, bigger place? Or?
No, down at Frankie's.
Oh, was it at Corey Weeds' cellar?
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, she's so sweet.
Okay, so it was at Corey Weeds' cellar, because I was going to say, like, at what point in your life was this? Like, was this in your much younger years? No, this is kind of in the middle.
Middle.
Like, you had already started teaching. And,
yeah.
And then you had met Jay Clayton, who recently sadly passed away. You met Jay Clayton at some point along that way, too. How did you meet Jay?
I met Jay at the Banff Center.
Oh.
And she was just so lovely and bright. You know, and was so into hanging out with the kids. She was just lovely, lovely. And so we became friends, and she'd been up here a few times, in the J room. Yeah. And we all just loved her, you know. She was really beautiful. So lucky us to get to even look at these people, let alone talk to them and become friends and stuff.
And then Sheila would have come back to Vancouver a few times after that first meeting.
Yes.
Where she said she had a beautiful name to play at maybe the jazz festival or Ironworks and things like that. And so then you kept that relationship going.
Yes.
When she would come to Vancouver, you would see her?
I would try to see her, yeah. And she was just always so sweet.
Yeah.
Just sweet. The two of them, actually. Big hearts.
Yeah.
Sheila and Jay. Couldn't be nicer people.
I have a friend who was very inspired by Jay Clayton when she was studying. Her name is Megan Gillespie. She went to Kaplan University.
I know Megan. I taught her at Cap.
So there you go. I was like, okay, my friends who have been your students, there's one of them.
Yeah. So Megan, what year was she in there?
This was like, you know, 2011, 2010, 2011, 12, that she would have been coming there. Right. So a good 10 or 15 years ago now. Even.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I like Megan.
Yeah. I came to Cap because of Megan.
Oh, did
and
you?
So
really?
Many of us did. Yeah. Megan went there from, this is funny if she listens to this too, I'll hear about this. This will be fun. We were in New Westminster growing up.
Yeah.
And Megan was like a few years older than me and a lot of my friends. And she went to Cap and she told us about how great it was. But in New Westminster at the time, we were all being told, like, everybody, you should go to McGill if you're really keen.
Go to McGill.
The people who were in our corner were like, because Kelly Prosnick was one of our band teachers.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we had Kelly and we had Jody Prosnick coming in. We had Steve Caldestad come in. Jesse Cahill always around. Tilden Webb. You know, those were kind of the people. So they, you know, they
went to
McGill.
So you couldn't find anybody good then to come in.
No. It's like a whole other generation between you and me of like, they were my mentors. Yeah. They're phenomenal.
Yeah,
and
wonderful
players. Of course, still are. But even back then, big inspirations to me. But they all went to McGill. And so the line for us at New Westminster was like, oh, if you're really good, you go to McGill.
Yeah.
But then Megan went to Cap.
Yeah.
And then she came back and she told us all about how great it was.
Yeah.
And then we kind of, year by year by year out of New Westminster, we followed her to Caplano. Like there were a couple of people the following year. And then me and one of my best friends, Madeline, who plays guitar, and some of our other friends, we went and we all kind of went to Cap, and more people would have studied with you, like the vocalist. But there's always been like these New West people who have gone to Cap ever since then. So she kind of kicked it off. And
Good
I mean, she's
her.
Amazing. Now she has like her doctorate and she's
Good
amazing.
For her. That's
but
wonderful.
She's really inspired by Jay.
Say hi for me, will you?
I will,
I've seen her for a long time.
Yeah.
She's a nice person.
I mean, now I'm just looking, we were talking about records and about files. And now I'm just looking at photos. Now there's all these other, there's like magazine covers and things that feature you, and there's photos of other musicians in this space. There's more people that you could talk about from there too. I'm looking at a photo where you and Carmen Price are singing a duet or something. Yeah. It looks like at Frankie's or maybe the cellar.
The one on the end?
Yeah.
Matt Smith.
Matt Smith and Carmen. And yeah, Carmen. And you.
Yeah, I loved singing with those boys. Yeah. They were so much fun.
That looks like it wouldn't have been that long ago. Do you think that's Frankie's?
Oh, yeah, it's Frankie's, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I haven't seen those guys for such a long time.
Yeah.
Which means that I have to call them up and make them come over here. At gunpoint. Come on.
Yeah.
And then above that is a picture of me at the classical joint, which was, did you ever go to the joint?
No, that's before my time.
Before your time. It was a really, really sweet place. Yeah. And there's me.
Who are you playing with there?
I'm playing with Roy Steiff, is the saxophone player. Killing saxophone player. Little tiny guy, just like this beautiful sound. And Mike Serin is the drummer. He's from the States. Yeah, Mike Serin. And oh, that's Ron Samworth.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then right in the back, that's Roy Steiff and me. And in the back, what's his name? John, but I can't remember his last name right now, the bass player. Mm-hmm. Will come to me. But that was great for me because Roy and Ron and I were all here, and then those three guys all came up from Seattle to play. So that was really sweet.
Yeah.
Look at that. Shirley Horn.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Shirley Horn yet.
Shirley's amazing. She's very quiet and sweet. I mean, you can hear it in her singing, right? She doesn't belt anything out, right? She just sort of gets in there, and does it, swings her tail off, you know? Well, I hope one of these days I'll get to play again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I heard you not long ago. I heard you play at Frankie's.
Yeah.
I remember you doing a duet with Nick Peck on piano. I think you had a bass player as well. But I was sat in the front row there at Frankie's with my front row regulars, like Cipallo and Vince. And yeah.
How long ago was that, though?
Not very. No, it was past all this COVID stuff, and it was in the more recent years. It was the one time.
Oh, nice.
And when I saw your name, it's like, oh, I got to go see that because, it doesn't happen as often these days, so it was special.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, it happens here every day, so you're welcome good. To come over anytime.
It's your own practice, your own space. That's really important.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I was thinking about your version of Everybody's Song But My Own.
Oh,
it comes from the Kenny Wheeler, Norma Winstone thing, which I know, and you also have a photo of Natasha D'Agostino here. You know, that was huge inspiration to Natasha, yeah.
Yeah. Yes. I miss her.
Yeah. I was thinking about your version of that. I was thinking about the lyric in there that's like, there's still so much road left to take or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is.
Yeah, I didn't write that lyric.
Yeah. I was just curious if you still feel that way or something, or like just what that means to you. Like, yeah. I feel like even though you've done so much, maybe you would still feel that way.
I would be so happy to sit around with a bunch of people and play music, and I really would.
Yeah, there's the gigs that are happening right now, but it doesn't have to just be that. Like you're saying, you were talking about how Jay Clayton's been in this room or something, and things like that. There's another layer of it too that can happen where it's just like, you can just get together with people and make the music. You don't have to do everything just for the gig, right?
Yeah.
And you're still doing that, so.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be a gig.
Yeah.
Right? If I can get somebody who wants to come over and play piano and we can sing some tunes and stuff, that's perfect for me.
Yeah. I guess that's what I'm thinking of. I'm thinking of like, there is still so much road yet to go for you in that sense, because you're still here and you're still making music every day and you still know all these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting out and getting a gig is a different thing.
It is. But it doesn't have to be the only thing.
It doesn't have to be the only thing, you know, to have somebody come over and, you know, just get one of my favorite piano players and say, come on over, I'll give you money.
Yeah. I know we were talking off air about Tom Keenly's side before we started this, and like I got to do that with him. He invites me like over to play at his place, and I want to do that.
Nice.
Soon, yeah.
Tom's a sweetheart.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So many nice people in this community, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just curious, like it's a beautiful day here in the springtime, and we have like the summer ahead of you, and like I'm just curious to take it out. Like, what do you like to do in Vancouver after all these years when the sun comes out and when it's a beautiful season and there's people staying and stuff? Do you like, what are you looking forward to over the next however long in this season?
Just day to day.
Yeah.
Huh. I feel like I'm probably fairly close to Homer now, you know, unless my beautiful husband Guy wants to go out somewhere, you know, and we'll go out and see music somewhere and go for a nice dinner or something. But this is my little spot right here. Looks very funky right now. Needs to be cleaned up a little bit. But I'm enjoying just being where I am right now, because that's all you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those moments are gone. These are yet to come. Just be there when you can, right?
Yeah.
I think that's the nicest thing you can do.
Well, I feel really honored and lucky to have been in the space with you. Aww. And gotten to talk with you for an hour. I'm so grateful for it.
A whole hour?
Thank you so much. I had a lot of fun hearing your stories, and thank you for welcoming me here.
I hope some of them were funny or good or something. But, yeah.
It's all wonderful to me.
Yay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Rhythm Changes podcast. If you enjoyed it, become a member for free today at rhythmchanges.ca. You'll get the free weekly email where I send out artist events or recordings, fun things happening in our community, plus the week's upcoming events from the gig list every Tuesday morning. Rhythm Changes is a Chernoff Music production. This episode was hosted, produced, mixed, and edited by me. Special thanks again to Karen Plato. I'll catch you again in the next episode. Bye-bye.